I was in all the top groups at school, going through school. I was quite bright back then, but just found it hard to mix. And it was just painful every time I got to play time or just had to mix with anyone every time we went on holiday. And then I went through and got to my teens, and I was a real people pleaser just to try and fit in. And I remember my friends used to dare me to do silly things, and I'd do it just to fit in. And that was where I felt like I fitted in. They thought I had an ADHD or something like that when I was younger, because I was so different, and I couldn't seem to concentrate. Mum said when I was in a class with a climbing frame, I couldn't sit still. I'd be at the top every time they turned their back. I was always different. And I got to teenage years, and I had problems early on with thinking that I needed to look good and take laxatives and things like that, try and starve myself. And then I found alcohol at the age of 14, and that's when I felt like I got my confidence, really, and I felt like I could fit in with everybody. I felt like I could speak to anybody. I could speak to the boys, and that was what I found I wanted to do, really, just to party. I couldn't wait to just fill that void every weekend and get that ease and comfort I was looking for, really, and add that emotional unmanageability. Even then, I didn't seem to progress like my friends did, and like when I progressed through the drinking and drugs and things, it was like my friends had started settling down and going to work and things like that, and I just wanted to party. I thought, this is my identity. I wasted school when I had an aspiration of wanting to be a journalist and doing well at that, and then ended up in my party days. What my aspirations was, I just wanted to be a party girl 24/7, and that's what I strive to do, really. And I didn't stick to any jobs. I just wanted to get the oblivion I was looking. I was at the obsession over the effect, and it wasn't about the specific substance. It was just the effect it gave me, that ease and comfort, like I fitted in. And I had more consequences carrying on. Like that started off, the amends I owed for my parents were worried sick. I'd go missing for days on end, and I moved out onto a traveller's site, and mum thought I was dead regularly. I was getting into trouble with the police a lot, and I've got quite a lot of amends that I had to make, so I got more consequences. I lost two children because of my addiction. They got taken away because I kept going back to a violent partner and putting them at risk. And then I felt suicidal and tried to take my own life lots of times. I tried going into 5 different rehabs. I just couldn't surrender. I just couldn't get that step one. And I went in and out of meetings for 10 years. And I just couldn't be out of my own ideas. I just couldn't surrender and turn it over to God. And I just thought I could stop. I thought I had control still. I didn't think I'd lost the power of choice. And I just carried on, self-will run riot, and thought I knew the answers for me. It's me. You don't know what's good for me. And if I had a sponsor that told me something I didn't like, I'd sack them. And it's just like one big ball of chaos. That's what I was. And I got to this place. I was in a meeting one day and I just burst into tears, and I believe that was my step one. I just, from then, it was just like, it wasn't sad tears, it was just release, a surrender. I can't describe it. All I can say is that I was praying for this obsession to go, and it has never returned since. And I believe that was my step one. I was out of my own ideas. I became accountable. I became teachable. And I became willing to go to any lengths. And that was the start of my recovery journey. I was in a group that didn't show much love, and they were they were good on the big book and things, but it's perhaps I wasn't ready and couldn't hear it, but it was just didn't have enough love. I needed to be loved so I could love myself, really, as well as a big book thumper message. So I ended up moving away to Bristol, and I got lucky enough, found a really strong meeting. I didn't plan on going to this meeting. I ended up in it by accident, and they were big book thumpers, and I just felt like I'd heard the message, what I suffered from, for the first time. They talk about the allergy and the obsession, and they were on with the facts, and I just felt like, I felt like that saved my life, really. And I heard a man sharing there, it was full of the history of the big book and things, and I fell in love with the big book shortly after, because he was a teacher on this course on the big book and the steps in Bristol, and it was like a treatment centre. I went in there, and I learned about the big book, and that's when my love started for that, and that was 12 years ago. And I really did anything I could to learn it, really. And the allergy, it was like, I've got a nut allergy. I couldn't get my head around it at first, but then they described it like a manifestation of the phenomenon of craving. It just manifested in different ways. And like the nut allergy, I didn't crave another nut. That manifested in something different. So this one, once I put one in, it can be anything. It can be like drink, drug, food, or shopping. I have problems in several areas, really. And certain foods can trigger that phenomenon of craving, like certain drugs did, and alcohol. And so when I put one in, I couldn't control what happened. I couldn't control the amount, and I couldn't stay stopped, and like the qualifying questions. And then they explained about the obsession over the effect, and it overrides any other ideas. They talked about losing the power of choice and being powerless and needing a power. And the unmanageable part is, I was internally unmanageable and outwardly through being powerless. So I had emotional unmanageability going on. And it took me quite a few years to get emotional sobriety, really. It took me quite a few years, about 5 years, I think, till I started levelling out. I had so many years of carnage to put right that it did take a long time. And I got to the amends stage. The man that was a teacher on that course I talked about, he became my sponsor, and I got to the amends stage with him. I did step one. I'll lead up to there. Like step one, I told you about, I surrendered, and I believe that's when I realised I'd lost the power of choice when I was younger, and I couldn't manage my own life when I was drunk or sober, really. I was untreated addiction and needed to treat it. I had a spiritual malady and I needed a power greater than me. And in step two, I came to believe that I'd be restored, made whole again. It was like a part of the pie was missing, and I had to feel that with God. And I could make sane decisions where alcohol and drugs are concerned. And in step three, I turned my thinking and actions over. In step four, I've done about 10 different ways of doing the steps, but the BBA has been the most thorough and the one I've really got to the depths and really started healing from really old stuff. Really hit, like recently I had a feeling like I'd totally forgiven myself, and had a picture of myself as a child and a teenager. I went back and gave them a hug, and I just had some healing tears, and it was just like I'd finally forgiven myself. And I said, don't worry, I'm happy now. And it was like I had a bit of a moment, really. I've been doing a lot since I've been doing this BBA. I have different like revolutions, really, like spiritual awakenings almost. So yeah, I've been growing throughout it. I've been doing the BBA for 2 years now, and I wrote the lot on the first page when you direct in a play and you give people certain roles and they have to stick to that, otherwise you get resentful. And it's like coming from a place of really high self-esteem. And so I really enjoyed it that way, doing it that way actually, and seeing the scripts I give people, and if they don't stick to it, then I'd get sore, and I'd be, and it really, step three reading for me, doing that for 7 days, I get that, a sponsor used to do that quite a lot, and it just show I'm all over it, even sober, I can still want to run the show and play the actor. And then in the realization that I'd done this or similar to other people, and that was another awakening. And the other part that was awakening was the fear grid. I loved that, putting my fears down, keep asking till you get to the core fears and the fear loops. And that was mind blowing for me, really. And that was another drastic change. In sexual harms and the harms at the end of the resentment, actually, it was a big revelation as well. It was like I didn't harm just the person. It was like that it could affect their children, the family members, work colleagues, whoever's around them, really. And in the sexual one, I wrote the harms. In 6 and 7, it was about change for me, from like impatience to tolerance, and just practicing pause, pray and proceed, and watching my reactions and working on myself daily. And I do a daily review, and every night, I'm not skipping past 9, I'm just saying I do a review that keeps things in the day and ask me the questions on page 86. And so it's like from the bedevilments on page 52 I was living to the promises on page 83, and it's just amazing the life I've got today in the amends stage. Like I said, that sponsor I had, that was the teacher, he got me to write my list, and he said Dr. Bob relapsed, and until he made all of his amends, and that put the fear of God in me back then. And I was very, very thorough, actually, on these amends. I thought I had been anyway until I got to the awakening. I made graveside amends to grandparents. I made amends to my mum and dad. My dad just said, keep doing what you're doing. I don't want to bring up the past. And he says he's proud of me today. My mum, she said that she used to see a police car go around the block of flats where she lived every night. She thought I was dead, and that's how much she was worried sick and put the fear of God in her. And then she realised he lived there. And that was really quite emotional, me and my mum, because we're very close now and we didn't get on for years. She didn't know how to handle me. And I hated her for some reason. I just blamed her for things that I didn't have to blame her for. And I had some deep resentments that I worked through. And because she had phoned the social services, which I don't blame her, and that's how I lost my daughter. And I realised she was doing the best for her grandchildren, and I couldn't have done anything. I didn't have the power to do anything different back then. I just wasn't capable of bringing up children. And I did financial amends, which were painful. It was painful around finances. I made amends to friends. I made amends to refuges. A refuge that I went to saying that my partner was after me and he wasn't, just to get away and make a fresh start. I made amends to them. I made amends to night shelters that I stayed in, like homeless hostels. Doctors for false prescriptions. Police station to for abuse when I was drunk, getting arrested. And then I nearly got arrested with one. I didn't take guidance on this one. I went to make amends for shoplifting in this chemist, and they came rushing over and said, you're trespassing. And I was quite disgusted that he'd recognised me. He had a picture of me in the office and recognised me from years before. And I was quite insulted by this. I thought I looked well now. And so he said it looked at me as if I was mental, obviously, because I didn't have guidance around this. And I said, I just want to make amends. And he said, write to head office. So I went away and just found it, you know, a bit of a laugh, and I didn't give it a second thought. But since coming into the awakening one, I had a few left. Like, I phoned a fire brigade and said there was a fire at school when I was younger. I got in touch with the fire brigade and made that one because my sponsor suggested that I have a total clear, you know, clear conscience, and because it can block me off from God, these things, and I can carry guilt and shame around this, and I need to be at one with my master, really. And so I got in touch with my sponsor said, get in touch with three places that used to shoplift the most, and speak to head office and ask them if there's a charity of their choice or anything you can do for to make amends and explain. So I did that. Two of them gave me a few charities they supported, and I had to give an amount that I'd feel. So I did that. And then this one, they said that they wanted an apology email. And I'll just read it quickly. It says, dear sir and madam, currently in a 12-step program and wish to make amends for 20 years ago. I used to shoplift in your monsoon and accessorized stores in Oxford. I spoke to a manager at customer services and asked if I could donate to any charity you support, but he told me to write an apology to this email address. I'm sincerely sorry for my behaviour and my addiction. I've been clean 12 years now. If there's anything I can do to put things right, please let me know. And then they wrote back and said, hi, Suzanne, thank you very much for your recent email. We truly cannot thank you enough for your apology emails. We are really pleased to hear you are 12 years clean and hope this continues for many years to come. Here at Monsoon Accessorize, we would like to wish you all the luck in the world with regards to your 12-step program. Also, very well done. Should you require any further assistance, please do not hesitate to get back in touch, as we are always happy to help. And that just showed me it means a lot to these people. Like when I went to the night shelter, they said they'd never had that done before and they were in tears. And I have to really go to any lengths for my recovery, because I was an all or nothing addict and alcoholic, and I'm an all or nothing in recovery. I've recovered from a hopeless state of body and mind, but I need to continue this on a daily basis. I only have a daily reprieve, really. And
that's just 5 minutes reminder.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Yeah, so I have to remember that guilt and shame that I carry blocks me from God, and I need to look the world in the eye, really. And I just felt at this stage I had this spiritual awakening, change of thought and attitude, and that's when I got my God consciousness. I felt like I'd made right my wrongs and I could walk around with a clear conscience, and I feel like I can stand up straight and not look down all the time. And I just don't let fear control me, really, and expectations of future resentments waiting to happen. And I had a lot of expectations on people, and I try not to have any now. The only one that I put on a pedestal now is God, because I put my sponsor on a pedestal for 8 years, and it was him I went to first, but now it's always God, because he relapsed and ended up asking me to sponsor him, which was a turnaround. But I'm glad I can be of service. And so we may have done something based on self and by that by guilt and shame and being resentful, and it blocks us off from decision made in step three. If I don't do this stuff, it's like making a cake, and if it has 12 suggestions in this recipe, then you'd follow it. You don't just take one out and not do one thoroughly. You do every one as it says, and that's what I've done, I feel like. And I've cleared the wreckage of my past, and I've got rid of my grosser handicaps. And so food and shopping that I've struggled with in sobriety, I'm just about to start the BBA food ones at the end of July, I'm going to start reading through with a friend tomorrow. We're going to start reading, getting ready for it with the transcribing. And I just thought I'd finish with just a little reading at the end. If we look at the promises, we will see that these are the things we were trying to get from old destructive practices. We were trying to wrestle these things out of life with alcohol, drugs, food, relationships, gambling, or whatever escape we were using. Now that we have removed these things that blocked us from God, now that we have tapped this unsuspected inner resource, we have found a power more beneficial than the power we found in alcohol or drugs or other compulsions. At one time, the power of these things seemed satisfactory to us. Then they turned on us and became our destruction. We abandoned them in step one and made a decision in step three. On a new power we had begun to find in step two, with step nine, we have completed the actions. We have found the inner resource of strength, and that power solved our worst problems. And I really liked that today. I was looking at something to read, and I've got a really strong connection with God today. I'm really lucky, actually. I get words from God, quite strong words. I'm part of a church, which I felt like I needed to enlarge my spiritual life. And I like doing meditation. I start doing that daily, and I find that really keeps me at peace. And the biggest amends I've made in this lockdown is my mum has got 5 at-risk factors in this coronavirus, and I had her stay here for 2 months. And that was the biggest living amends I could make, really, because I kept her safe, and she knows I'm there for her when it matters. And she said, I know I've got options now. I could come to you if I needed to. I know you're always there for me. And it's the other way around now. And it's like I'm the parent, and we didn't argue once. And usually it takes about 3 or 4 days and we push each other's buttons. But this really showed, I showed up when it needed, and that's because of the program. And I just feel so grateful. I try and carry this message to alcoholics. I sponsor people and I lead BBA workshops. I do whatever I need to stay sober and make the other people's lives around me a bit better. I'll leave it there. Thanks.
Suzanne, thank you so much. Wow, thank you so much. That's fantastic. I'm going to stop the recording.